This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 797, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who understand that both freedom and great power come with great responsibility. Go ahead and follow that to its conclusion.
Hello again, friend of a friend. I knew you were. Our common goal is waiting for the world to end. Now that the truth.
Hey, this is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 797. I am Preachy Josh Flanagan, and here is my opinionated co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
I have thoughts. Many, many thoughts.
The thing about those thoughts is that apparently if someone doesn't agree with you, there is no proper forum for those thoughts. This is not the time for those thoughts. This is not the place.
No.
What do I do with these thoughts then?
They fester.
We got off social media.
Yeah.
So then it's just poor spouses. You know what should be happening? You should all get off social media for that very same reason.
Oh, yeah.
We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks the one they like the best. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about the book, the other books, some books, the patron pick, which is a book. We're going to listen to some email.
So many books.
I'm going to guess that those emails are either based on books or possibly film or television that are based on books. Do you know what I do for a living? Make books.
Yeah. Josh's life is book-based.
It's what we're about.
Yeah. It's not who we are, but...
I think it might be.
Actually, you're right, actually. Upon further review.
It's true. We hope to have a good time. I think it's already started. There will be spoilers. So if that's going to make you not have fun, you know, watch your ass for that. Connor, you had the pick.
I did. And oh, the sweet elixir of life, May's book number one from Dark Horse Comics, written and drawn by Jeff Lemire with Steve Wands on letters. And I say the sweet elixir of life because Jeff Lemire has been, low these many years, busy building up his Black Hammer empire at Dark Horse, which I've been enjoying. If you've listened to the show, you know that. But we first came across Jeff Lemire with books like the Essex County Trilogy that were intensely personal little stories that, not little, but about people, not about superheroes, that really tugged at your heartstrings or punched you in the gut or whichever metaphor you want to use, that he would write and draw. And this book, May's book, was like a return to that, you know, the Roughneck book, the Royal City book he did a while back, like that kind of thing where it's about just people and their, usually their emotions.
Working class folks who are very taciturn.
Right, who are struggling because of grief or sadness. And this book is no different. This, I believe it's a 5-issue or 6-issue miniseries. It's a book about a man. He's 50 years old. He's a building inspector, I assume in Canada. And he has lost his daughter, and he can't shake the memory of her. But the problem is also that, as often happens, the longer you're away from someone, your brain starts to sort of erase them from it. Like, if you think about trying to conjure up the memory of a face, it gets harder the longer you haven't seen that person. And so he is dealing with these dreams about his daughter and her red sweater that used to be his red sweater, but she wore it all the time, and the face starts to get fuzzy. And this whole issue is a lot about grief, and it's about the repetition of his day. You know, he gets up, he showers, he goes to work, he goes to a job, he becomes Batman, he goes to work, he goes to the building sites.
I'm sorry. So there's a bit in Batman 89 where he says that, and yeah. I have tried to find that clip, and it feels like nobody isolated that moment when he's trying to explain to Vicky Vale poorly. And again, I don't think that's good Batman, but it is fucking quality Keaton.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
how like a normal guy
gets up, has
like
breakfast.
I can apply that to my life all the time. And he's pausing. He's like, and you see him working over what to say from word to word.
He's struggling over what a normal person does in a day, like has breakfast or with a person goes out to a job. Anyway, you know, he's in the cycle of his life in this issue where he gets up, he goes to work, he goes to the building site, he comes home, he gets his mail, he doesn't talk to his cute neighbor, he sits down, eats dinner from the TV, goes to sleep. It's like there's a repetition to it. But in the midst of that, he's having these memories of his daughter, and again, she's like blurred out. And he starts getting these calls from his unknown phone number. He's declining them at first because that's what every normal, right-thinking person does. But he eventually answers one, and it's a voice claiming to be his daughter. And what does that mean? It's the first issue. We don't know what's going on necessarily. But I was so captivated by, we've talked about this over the years, Jeff Lemire's ability to tap into often the sad human emotion. The sadness is
sad,
palpable.
Middle-aged, white, Canadian male repression.
And the other thing is, I don't think this gets talked about enough, but Jeff Lemire is an incredibly good cartoonist. His style is messy and dirty and some would call ugly. You know, he's not Darwin Cook here, but I spent a lot of time looking at the faces. Everybody in this book is instantly recognizable, and that's not a situation you often have in comics. In fact, there's a couple of books this week that weren't like that. And he does it often with just a couple of lines, and he conveys really deep emotion with just a couple of lines. You know, just the way he angles the eyebrow. It's just a very thin line, but it changes everything in the face. I'm constantly impressed by his art style, which over the years has been tough for some people, but I think it's terrific. And the coloring here is very understated. It's mostly sort of black and white sepia tone until you get to the memories of the daughter. That's when you get like reds and blues and things. I don't know where this is going. I don't know what ultimately this is about, but I was really captivated by it, and I thought the craft of this blew away everything else this week.
Nice. It was fine. I think I really appreciate his work, and I don't think he's ever beat Essex County.
Oh, no.
With this stuff, and I don't think there's anything
that's
wrong with it.
Magnum opus.
And just in general, I'm in no mood for this kind of thing.
Sure, I can see that.
If that makes any sense. I also think if you compare this to Essex County, I think that his storytelling has improved. Really, he's capturing emotion. Mm-hmm. At a very visceral level without having the writing do it.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through the pages and very little dialogue. Yeah.
His mood, tone, all that stuff, it says exactly what it needs to without having to put any words on the page, and that's a real talent. I just don't want to feel like that right now.
Listen, I get it.
Yeah, I've made a real right turn from like the emotionally like distraught, God, the emotionally distraught parent. I don't have that.
Yeah.
I don't need to relate to that. But you know, really, really good. You know, those are the things. So I'm glad that you really.
I love his art so much. I'm just scrolling through it. He doesn't get talked about enough, I think, amongst the top cartoonists.
Do you think this had something in it that like that last run of Sweet Tooth didn't in terms of the art? Because I felt like it worked better.
Yes.
And I don't know why.
I don't want to say that the Sweet Tooth art was more polished, but it maybe was a little more polished in terms of like a you know, a DC book versus a Dark Horse book where he can basically make it as dirty as he wants. Mm-hmm. The art seems rougher here, looser.
Yeah, but in a way it makes it seem more complete, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it feels more real in terms of what his expression is.
And you're not coloring it to look like a mainstream book.
Yeah, I mean, that book wasn't successful.
and I don't think in any way. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge Lemire fan, but that book didn't really do anything, didn't add anything to the Sweet Tooth story.
No, they just had to bring something else because there was a show.
Cashing in on I guess it was a really popular show.
Is it?
That's what I've heard, but who knows? You know, it's streaming. There's no idea.
No concept of anything anymore. I have fully turned into old man. I'm not aware of it.
No, the thing is, there's no way to know. You know,
that too.
Used to get, all right, let's talk about this, weekly ratings reports and even in the newspaper, but now it's there's no way to know who's watching what. I just know from, you know, talk, and also everybody at my job watched it, and that's the only one. You know, you didn't watch it? No, I didn't. I didn't watch it. Mm-hmm. They just assume I watch all the comic shows. Anyway.
There are a lot of them.
I had good books this week. Yeah, it's too many. I had good books this week, but this one I read fairly early on, and the quality of the craft and the story really put it head and shoulders. There was not even a contest. I mean, there was other good books, and books I could, if a Miz book hadn't come out, there were books I could have easily made pick of the week. But after, you know, it just wasn't a choice. There was not a contest.
Good. That's always nice.
And one of them, like in the opposite end of the spectrum, was Infinite Frontier number 6. Have you read this miniseries?
I tried. In the last issue or two, I was I think maybe 2 issues ago, I was reading through it and I maybe didn't finish because I don't know what the fuck's going on. Yeah. And then I think the next one came out and I had forgotten about that. And I was a few pages into it and went, no. And so this one, I downloaded it and then went, no. No, I didn't even bother.
I can't even necessarily tell you what this is about, other than this was sort of your classic bridge miniseries. So you know, whatever the last big thing was, I can't even remember what it was, the last big DC story. This is leading up to the next, or the next event. I say next like this one a lot, but DC hasn't really been doing events. So this is leading up to the next big event, I believe. And it's very tied into Crisis and Infinite Earths. All the characters show up, like Pariah and Harbinger. It did a couple things. First of all, it's Josh Williamson and Harmonica. Harmonica's terrific. I love his art. And it brought back a very classic Darkseid. So, you know, in the multiverse reemerged, all these versions of Darkseid apparently combined into one ultimate Darkseid. And this ultimate Darkseid looks a lot like the classic Darkseid, which is great because I didn't like the New 52 version. And the other thing, look, I admit this is stupid.
Wait, anything that starts with "look" is going to be great.
I admit this is stupid, but I'm reading this book, and the whole time Barry Allen's been running on this wheel, very much like Crisis, and he gets zapped into this other plane, and it's the epilogue of the story, and he sort of finds himself in a very destroyed planet, like all the buildings are destroyed, there's rubble everywhere. And he looks up in the sky, and this is a double-page spread. There's all these Earths, you know, the sort of classic DC image of all the Earths in the sky. Only this in this one, they're all colliding and destroying each other. And somebody says, "This is Multiverse 2. I just started laughing for 5 minutes. Okay, Multiverse 2, Electric Boogaloo. The concept is just so dumb, but kind of awesome in its dumbness, that I just laughed and was like, fine, we're doing Multiverse 2. Let's do Multiverse 2. Let's really dial down on it. So I don't know that this was a good book. Barry Allen gets zapped into some sort of Silver Age world, Earth Flash 1. It's not exactly Silver Age because his kids are there, and also for some reason Wallace West, which is a great opportunity to get rid of the second Wally West that we don't need, that no one needs, that was only there because of a short-lived actor on a TV show. He wasn't even there for 3 seasons. We could have got rid of him and simplified, but nope, still there. Listen, I can't say this was a good book or a good miniseries, but I can say I really enjoyed it. It had really terrific art, and I was happy to see Darkseid. And in the end, that we see briefly the denizens of Apocalypse looking as close to classic as probably we're going to get. So I'm hoping that ship is righted, and they brought Roy Harper back to life. So what are you going to do? Multiverse 2.
I really like that you liked it.
It's dumb.
Yeah, no, but you found the way to enjoy it, whereas I was like, I'm completely lost here, and I'm not enjoying this at all. Sure. And I wanted to. I was like, all right, let's get this President Superman to work for me.
And that never stops being funny.
It is pretty funny.
President Superman, and the fact that they all address him as President Superman all the time, is also dumb and funny.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. But I couldn't make it work. This had Captain Carrot in it, right?
Yeah, it's like the multiverse Justice League team kind of thing. But the number two book this week I thought was Last Flight Out, number one, also from Dark Horse Comics, written by industry veteran Mark Guggenheim, with art by Eduardo Ferragato and Marcelo Costa. There's just a lot of Italians in comics right now. And edited by Kyle Higgins.
I just figure them all hanging out like Vinny Viducci. Hey, what are you...
Did you read this?
Pick of the week.
It was really good.
This would have been my pick of the week if I had had the pick of the week. I enjoyed the hell out of this thing.
This felt like the work of an old hand, you know? Like a veteran pitcher comes into the game and maybe can't throw 98 anymore, but can work the corners and change speeds and do all the things that need to get done to get outs. And you're like, that's just a vet who knows what to do. And yep. Mark Guggenheim is that guy who takes this story, which I'll let you talk about in a second, and makes it a ticking clock mystery and all kinds of things at the same time that really make it compelling. By the end of it, I was like, I'm fully in on this story.
And it was one of those things where it's extremely by the numbers, mm-hmm. but in such a way that it didn't feel rote. It was done extremely by the numbers, but with craft, so it kind of worked. And what I mean by that is, so you've got a story at the beginning, you got an Elon Musk type character, and he's working on
Reed Richards
science. And he's working on science to, I guess that's not Elon Musk, but he's working on an AI for a car. This is why I said that.
Right.
And there's a crash, or his wife calls at the beginning, and she's like, the baby's getting born. He's like, I'm not going to miss that. And then he misses it.
Right.
And then there's a car crash, and his wife dies, and he's stuck with his kid. And then, you know, he works all the time. So he gets a bunch of nannies for his kid who basically raise him, and he just doesn't have time for anybody. We skip 20 years in the future. We go from 2035 to 2055. So what we have here, by the way, is near future hard sci-fi.
Yep.
Oh, that's good stuff. All the humans have to get off Earth.
For obvious reasons.
6 years to go before we can't handle it. And he's in charge of making the shit that takes people away. And there's a metaphor going on here where like a bunch of the people in the world think, oh, this is bullshit. This isn't really happening. And he finds out that his daughter is one of the people who isn't getting on the ship. And so at this last moment, you know, he's got 24 hours to go. He goes off.
And there's a window if they can leave. They don't explain why. They don't need to.
Yep.
If they don't leave this last ship.
60 years.
2/3 of the population has already left the planet. If this last ship doesn't leave in the next 24 hours, it won't be able to leave for 60 years and they won't survive that long. So this is a ticking clock. You know, the bomb's going to go off.
So what's interesting, though, is that I just explained the whole book to you, mm-hmm. but this thing moved.
Yeah,
and,
it did.
And when they say, well, what's the window? And he said, well, the next window's in 60-whatever years. And, you know, how many years does the Earth have left to be habitable? It was like 6 years. And so there's no explaining. They don't tell me where they're going. They don't tell me what the ships do.
They don't need to.
It's a cool drawing. No, they don't. And they keep it going in just that breakneck way. You know, one of my favorite things to watch is a natural disaster movie, mm-hmm. and this is 2012, or this is whatever.
Listen, Mark Guggenheim has spent most of his time making TV and movies, so like mm-hmm. he creates a cinematic story here.
With economy.
Yeah.
You know, there's no wasted space. It works really, really well. It's really compelling, and the issue's over before you know it, and you want to know what happens next.
The UN Secretary General, who's running this program, who's also the same one from
Ava Sarala,
she agrees.
I'm glad you saw that too.
Agrees to give him a crew of Navy SEALs to fly him to Chicago, where his daughter is, and of course, because of climate change, the helicopter overheats and they crash, and there's only a few of them left. First, a bunch of the Navy SEALs don't even believe in the climate change that's happening. Mm-hmm. So now there's only three SEALs. One of them's injured, plus the scientists who have to get to Chicago and somehow get back to wherever. Where was it that they were taken off from? Was it California?
The ocean? So, no, there's big snowy mountains behind them. So,
well, they're somewhere. Maybe it's New York. It doesn't say. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But they have to get his daughter and get back in 24 hours. So now we've got a ticking clock situation amidst. They're like, you know, you don't want to go to Chicago. Everyone who's left is really bad.
Yeah, I like that it was like with Chicago. Ooh, we don't want to go there. Like, it just is an agreement and a knowledge.
Oh, this was terrific. This was really good. I read it on Lark. I was like, ooh, I haven't read a comic from him in a while. It looks like it's sci-fi. I'll check it out. And I was like, oh, shit, that was really good.
Yep. Yeah. And I had read the solicit, and I thought, I think I just expected there to be a supernatural thing, and there just wasn't, and I was just so thrilled. It was really fun. That was like the most surprise, you know, of like, oh, it's a different cool thing that is coming out, you know, but done in the style of mainstream comics and the language and everything, but just a good story.
I read May's book and Last Flight Out back to back, and I was like, comics are great.
Yeah.
Not All Robots number 2 from AWA. And Mark Russell, Mike Deodato Jr., Lee Lowridge, Steve Wands. Josh, you didn't read number 1. We talked about it in the show.
Yeah, I missed it, and I then went and read it. So I got two, and I just wanted to check in on it.
Mm-hmm. We had two Mark Russell books this week, by the way. We had this.
Yeah.
Dead Box. I thought Dead Box was bad.
I couldn't think of anything to say about it. So that's why it's not
on the
list.
I just didn't think it was compelling. Bad relative to Mark Russell's talent. I was like, this is not compelling. I don't know why I'm reading this.
With Not All Robots, I actually really enjoyed the first issue. I think I enjoyed it more than you did.
You did, yeah.
But in a sense, I'm not entirely sure what to make of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a lot of things at once. I think it's interesting that you said, you know, he had mentioned it was largely about domestic abuse. And I can see that.
He says largely about toxic masculinity.
Right.
Elements there, but it seems like there's more interesting. I would never have pulled that out as the thing it's mainly about.
I wouldn't have said it.
Yeah.
Basically, if I'm the creator, because it's that, but like that's obviously an element that he's trying to work through, but there's a bunch of other things that are happening too. I'm not entirely sure what they are, but I do find it very interesting and very compelling. He is riding a line, I think, where he has the sense of humor that we all know about, but the book's kind of serious.
Mm-hmm.
So every once in a while, there will be sort of jokes or gags that are kind of silly, but it feels incongruous. You know, out of place to a certain extent. I don't think that Mike Diodato helps.
Oh, really? I think he's really good here.
I do too, but I think in terms of me trying to nail down what the tone is, I have a hard time with it. I think that the art is great. I think this is great Mike Diodato art.
Yeah, it's nice to see him drawing something that's not superheroes.
Yeah, no, totally. And like his robots are fantastic. And the family, you know, the body language of the humans is great. I just can't quite sort the tone out.
Yeah, it's weird. It's definitely heading to a dark place.
It's not quite serious, and it's not quite funny. I mean, like, there's a mass murder of, like, hundreds of thousands of people in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say the joke. And it's sort of treated like, well, you know, they had it coming in a certain way.
That's the robots.
Right.
See, I think the more interesting thing here is the automation. You know, the coming of the automated world. That, to me, seems like the more interesting thing to mine here. And so the feeling the robots have about the humans is like, fuck these guys. We do all the work. They just sit around doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't care about the dead people in Orlando. And they, you know, they do all the work. So, you know, they have the talk shows and the one robot gets charged with the murder and goes into court, sticks his thumb drive in the machine and gets the immediate non-guilty verdict and goes home. Like a coming automation of all aspects of life is, I think, the more interesting thing to delve into here.
Mm-hmm.
The automated car hitting the person on the street and, you know, algorithm error. Sorry, here's your compensation.
Just drops cash. Like, that's a straight-up gag.
Yeah. There wouldn't be cash in this world.
That's a good point, but you need it for the visual gag.
Yeah. I did laugh at the end, though, when... So one of the things that they decided to do is give all the robots, like, fuzzy names instead of, like, robot names. So, like, the main robot here who, with the main family is called Snowball now, and he's been working in his room and freaking everybody out, and the dad goes in. Hey, Snowball, what's going on? What are those weapons you're making? Snowball's in a play. There's a stack of like axes and
then
and
he
swords.
Comes out. So I guess in this, like, Snowball is the Don Draper and the dad in the family is the beaten down wife. Is that?
Well, in this world, every family has a robot. The robot does the work and the family spends the money.
Right. But he's not doing it like a slavery thing. That's not what it's about. It's not like, you know.
No, it's capitalism. I think again, this is the masculinity thing. It's like the angry dad.
Right.
That's why I think the message is muddled in terms of that sense. But the robots are getting tired of the fact that they do all the work and humans are just, you know, living off their labor. There's a coming massacre on both sides.
Yeah, I am engaged and invested, and I'm going to read there. I really am curious sort of where it's going to go and end up.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a guy who's experimenting. Like, his themes are always sort of on the line, but he's experimenting with times and places and characters. And, you know, for a person who sort of sticks in one lane, I think he does a really good job at trying different types of projects, but all sort of, you know, have his voice to a certain extent. I got to respect that. And even to a certain extent, like Dead Box, you know, which honestly, I don't remember anything about right now, telling you, but it was a completely different type of book than any of the other ones that he'd done. So I like that a lot. You know?
Yeah, no, he's got a lot of ideas, which is great.
Yep.
They don't always work.
That's true.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Hey, that's how you can help support the show. That's the main way. There's lots of ways to help support the show, and that's how these type of shows get supported, is through listener largesse. Like, you're our robot. We are the family. You're the robot making the weapons. This is a bad metaphor. Over the past few years, the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy have unlocked the patron pick, which we'll discuss. The Talk Explodes, the Book Explodes, the Media Explodes, all those shows, the YouTube content we've been putting up onto our YouTube page. They get a monthly hangout they unlocked. There's lots of benefits for everyone from the patrons, but mostly for the patrons themselves. And hey, we have a new stretch goal we added recently. And lots of people ask us, hey, are you going to do a special edition show on, insert one of the many comic book shows here? And the answer is always no, because it was mostly Ron and I doing those. Ron left the show. Josh doesn't really watch a lot of those shows, so we decided we would just not do the TV shows, because there are also too many of them. But we decided, hey, enough of you have been asking, so that's our next stretch goal. If we hit our next stretch goal, you can find that on patreon.com/fanboy, we'll start incorporating comic book TV show special editions into our roster of shows. So check that out there. And of course, after that is the Return of the Barbecue video show.
I have thoughts about What If.
We are going to do What If as an animated brain trust show, but that's okay. Which you're allowed to join if you feel like you want to.
Well, thank you. I will.
Patrons also have the Patreon Facebook group and the Discord server. They've got really great communities. They're really fun. They're really active. Lots of great people there. It feels very much like the old days of Revision 3 and the message boards. A lot of things that the patrons get for supporting the show, and we thank everyone who does that. Also, fmbo.threadless.com is our merch store, and we currently have 11, 12, but one of us should update the number in the script. We have more shirts. That's the point.
I'm not counting it.
We added three more designs. Two are new. One is old. The Power of Responsibility shirt, which is flying off the shelves. It's our top seller right now amongst the three new ones. It's one of our original shirts, and that's back in the store. We also have two new designs. One is I Love Comics, Say It Loud, Say It Proud. And the other is Clint is Dead. If you know what that means, you know what it looks like. And those are all available at ifanboy.threadless.com. Well, you don't have to get them on t-shirts. They can also be got on phone covers, bath mats, notebooks.
The number is 11.
11 designs.
11.
They still sell the shower curtains. If you wanted Clint is Dead on a shower curtain.
Oh, man.
You could do that if you want.
That's a single man's game right there.
fanboy.com/support is our PayPal tip jar, and we thank anyone who does that.
You can get a neck gator face thing with that on there, and it is fucking scary.
fanboy.com/Amazon is where you can find the Books Blood books.
Oh, man, you can do a Clint is Dead skateboard, and it looks perfect.
That is cool.
Because that logo to me, I was like, that's a skateboard design.
Yeah.
Like, right away, oh, boy, I shouldn't know that.
So Josh may have a skateboard in his future. fanboy.com/Amazon is the final way. We thank everyone who helps us out in all various means. This is how we pay the bills. This is how we reward the time spent away from our families and our other lives. We thank everyone who does that. That's why the show is still going on. Please consider supporting if you enjoy the show. Green Lantern 2021 Annual Number 1, I wanted to mention because in this issue, Jessica Cruz has now joined the Yellow Lanterns. So she's no longer Green Lantern. And it was actually a really good issue. Ryan Cady was the writer. Sami Basri and Tom Derenek were the artists. And it was a really good issue showing the seduction of Jessica Cruz by Sinestro. And not in a sexy way, in a don't you want to join the Yellow Lanterns way.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of it, it made sense. It was like, okay, I get it.
The regular issue came out this week,
yes,
too,
there were
right?
Two Green Lantern
books this week. Okay, I think I missed the annual, but I'm hanging on by a thread with that Green Lantern book.
The regular Green Lantern book, I'm definitely holding on by a thread. There are so many Green Lanterns currently, and now you've added in Teen Lantern and the one from Far Sector. And so suddenly, Jessica and Simon shoved it to the side. So we're putting her into the Yellow Lanterns and putting that conflict into that was interesting. I thought it was a good issue.
But it's getting to be too much because the fact is this. The one universe that did not need new characters was the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
You had a bunch of them when it was just green. And then Geoff Johns came along and he was like, oh, yeah, times nine.
Yeah.
And now they're like, but now there's more Green Lanterns. And then they killed off a bunch of people. But boy, it seems like there's a lot left.
They killed off all the ones in the background.
I guess.
All the ones we still know and love are still there.
The green shirts.
Yeah. I liked it, though. I liked it more than the regular issue, which is, again, like Jeff said, it's hanging on by a thread of that one. The Amazing Spider-Man 73 or 874, I wanted to mention because I don't have any idea what's going on, especially with this issue. I don't know who, what is this character's name? Kindred is. It's very confusing. However,
he's not Harry.
Or maybe. I'm not prepared to make any statements.
I enjoyed it for so long, and I look at the cover now, and I see that dude on there. I was like, this has been going on for so long.
Years. I do want to mention this only because it very elegantly, and this is like a textbook situation of retconning out a story that was bad. And here we retconned out the Norman Osborn, Gwen Stacy, sex and children situation.
Oh, good.
Turns out that Harry, through various trickery and drugs and Mysterio, tricked his dad into thinking he had a relationship with Gwen Stacy and had children. In fact, there were none. And there was none.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, well, at least we did that.
Mm-hmm.
Harry's like, are you kidding? That would never have happened. And I was like, you're right. You're right, Harry. That never would have happened. which is what we all said at the time. That was it. Other than that, I was like, I have no fucking idea what's going on here. I know we keep talking about it, but The Nice House on the Left of Book 4 from James Tinney in the 4th and Alvaro Martinez Bueno.
Nice House.
Oh, shit.
The
I keep saying the left, but it's the lake. I don't know why I keep saying that.
Go on.
The main problem with this book is what we talked about last time is I don't know who any of these people are.
It was better this week.
But I really liked the conceit of this issue in which they leave a note of what they want, and then the next day it appears in a box. At first, it's all about groceries, and then it becomes, at least the comedian, you know, he gets all kinds of, you know, all the Academy Awards won by Lord of the Rings and most expensive watches, and he's getting stuff.
It's the fantasy part before we find out what the cost is, but yeah.
But I didn't even know, I thought the comedian was blonde.
I don't know who's who. Yeah. I didn't even know it was a comedian. But the one thing I can say is that throughout the issue, I knew who he was.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I was able to tell that, oh, this is the person who is doing this, and he's talking with the girl who's sad, and he's the one who figured out, you know, the go-around for the thing. And because it focused on, I think, one person.
Well, each issue has focused on one person.
Well, this one was clearer than.
Yeah. I like the fact that he's observant. You know, he's a comedian.
Uh-huh.
And so he's the one who's figuring stuff out. Like, he's seeing the relationship problems. He's figuring out the loopholes in the house because he's observant more than other people in the house.
Comedians.
Yeah, I like that part. And at one point, he's dressed in Ferris Bueller's clothes, which I thought was funny.
I don't think I noticed that.
But like I said, I don't know who any of these other people are at any given moment. When there's an emotional moment with another character, I'm like, I don't know who this person is. Like, is that the girl from the first issue? Like, I don't know.
I mean, I think we can both say we're rooting for this book.
Yeah.
Like, we're still in it. You know, there's a thing here. There really is, but it's work.
It's still interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. It's work.
Mm-hmm.
It's work.
It was not a super busy week, so I said, fine, I will read Khazar, Lord of the Savage Land, number one. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it was great.
Well, first of all, it was tied into Empire, which no one asked for. No one.
No. That said, I don't know anything about Khazar. Like, he's shown up in issues a couple times. I can't tell you I've ever read a thing. And sort of this weird domestic life as they both discover these new weird powers. I don't find the powers part to be compelling, but I found the relationships to be kind of compelling. Shanna the She-Devil, and, mm-hmm. and they have a teenage son, and, you know, he's kind of lost. Again, it's a little like middle-aged man crisis to a certain extent. But the story here is that the art by Germán García was gorgeous.
Which is the only reason why I read this. I was like, oh.
Mateus Lopez. I think I was halfway through it, and I went, wait a minute, this book is beautiful.
Yes.
Like, it's got a lot of Doc Shaner to it, but a little looser.
And it's more delicate. Doc Shaner has the classics, heavy cartooning lines. This is a very delicate drawing.
Yeah.
Very light lines.
Yeah, and just really wonderful coloring throughout the whole thing. And, you know, imagination and design. There's these mechanical living devices. And I don't quite know what's going on, but I do know that the fundamental basic of Khazar's real name is, what is it? Lord
Kevin Plunder. Lord Kevin Plunder.
Lord Kevin Reginald Plunder.
Yeah.
You know, it's very silly.
Well, he's Tarzan.
Yeah.
She's Jane. He's British. She's American. It's Tarzan and Jane. Mm-hmm. I was excited because I like Khazar or Khazar, however you want to say it. I've always said Khazar, but who knows who's right here. I like the characters in the conceit. I like Tarzan, so that's probably why. But I just didn't need it to be tied into Empire. I don't remember really Empire that well.
It doesn't matter.
Well, I just didn't know why any of this stuff was happening. They've got all these new powers. He had died in Empire, and now he's back, and he's kind of like a plant man. Like, I just...
It's a little swamp thing going on. I also respect the fact that there are dinosaurs in here, and it's the old school, tiny armed, upright Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah.
And it made his arms extremely tiny.
That's why he's so angry.
But pretty book, though.
Yeah,
I will probably read the next one because I thought that level of craft was super high.
Yeah, it was really great. So those books we want to talk about at patreon.com/ifanboy. Any patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. We called it the patron pick. And this week, for the second week in a row, the patron pick matched the pick of the week. It was May's book number one.
That's how you save time on a show. We've figured it out.
By a lot. So yeah. May's book number one, Josh. What is your rating on May's book number one out of five? Ratings.
3.5. 3.5.
All right. I gave it a 5, but I understand why Josh gave it 3.5.
Full 5.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sticking with it.
I'll read the next one.
Interesting. Well, I get it. It's a tough world out there. You don't need a sad story right now.
Maybe it ends up happy.
True. Mm-hmm. Patreon.com/ifanboy. Every patron can vote down about the rundown, but if you give it the $5 higher level, you get a superpower live on the show like these four. And they're not all gentlemen this week.
Tom Koldrick. I've been really into the area of effect powers lately.
Good.
But if you're hanging out with Tom, you're going to feel a little bit wasted.
Just a little buzzed?
A little bit wasted, yeah.
Woo!
A little like, oof. I don't know. I kind of have fun with him, but it takes a lot out of you to hang out with Tom.
Oh, so that kind of wasted. Just
a little
like
bit wasted.
Wiped out.
You're not passing out. It's not a little bit wasted, which is a little bit past buzzed.
I see. So a little bit past
in the parlance.
I see. Interesting. Do you get hungover from it?
No, but all the energy, of course, that would receive is not, you know.
Nick Vitanza. Nick can manifest any object that is recalled from memory. For instance, if you're talking to Nick, Josh, and you're like, man, when I was a kid, I had this t-shirt, I wore it all the time. It was awesome. It was A-Team was on it. And Nick can manifest that for you. He can pull it out of your memory and manifest it back as it was.
To be fair, there's entire industries who advertise to me on Instagram solely
right.
for that purpose.
But this is not a recreation. This will be the actual thing.
I can't fit in that.
Right. Well, maybe your kid's good.
Actually, that's not true. We all wore gigantic clothes in the 90s. So
that's
I
true.
Could probably fit in that stuff. They'd probably be too big, quite honestly.
Or you could be like, you know, I had this awesome rabbit in college. You know, they could bring back your rabbit.
He's talking about my car.
Yeah.
I didn't have a bunny in college. I would kill for that.
Exactly.
I would be so happy if I woke up and I saw my 1984 rabbit in my driveway. I don't even know what I would do.
You would do donuts.
I saw one. No, it's front wheel drive. That's ridiculous. I saw like a rabbit truck. The Mark I rabbit is that mm-hmm. sort of first one. You never see them around anymore. But there was the rabbit, and then there was a pickup truck version of it the other day. And I got so like, Lindsay's like, look at that. And I went, oh, those are awesome. Like, she's like, you're way too excited. I was like, but look at it.
People need to understand that Josh loved that car as much as any human being that I knew about in college.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's absolutely my feeling on it.
It represented freedom.
You can save Connor or the car from this burning building. He's going to be like, Connor can
save
himself.
You know what was awesome about that car? Two things. One, the bolt that controlled the idle was very loose, and so the only way I could stop it from loosening down and installing every time was to put a piece of duct tape over it. So it literally ran because of duct tape. The other thing was that there was some sort of leak on the bottom part. So when I would drive from Maine to Ithaca and it was raining, it would drip slowly on my foot the entire time. And in the winter, that was a problem. So I wouldn't put like grocery bags over my foot so I could drive it. Love that car.
I love the jury-rigged college car.
Do they still do this? Is this still a thing? I figure cars just are computers and run forever now, but this was like carburetor.
I remember
actually fueling.
I don't even remember whose car this was, but I remember driving through the car and it was like you had to like hit stuff to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. like the air conditioner or the stereo.
Air conditioner.
I don't know.
Oh, look at this. Can you even imagine not having an air conditioning in a car right now?
And I remember in true college nerd fashion. I also don't remember whose car this was. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a driver's license.
No. Yeah, no, you were New
I Yorker. Thought anything to do with cars was cool. He had taken a label maker and labeled all of the things in the car. Like
like steering wheel?
like I don't know. It was like navigation system. Like in high nerd speak. Like it was a spaceship.
Oh, like the DeLorean.
Yeah, like it was all like it was all labeled like it was a spaceship, but it's not this brown
wow.
falling apart car. And I thought that's so cool because I liked Star Trek and I didn't have a car.
That's some nerdy shit. That's like old school nerdy shit. I like that.
Whose car that was.
That's from back before nerds were like the thing. That was when nerds were nerds.
Nick couldn't tell me whose car that was, but Nick could bring me that car.
Okay. All right, we're doing a show here.
right. We still have two more people to do. Sorry. If you want more college reminiscences, email us with number 800 in the subject line. We'll do that on the show.
Natalia Bruner can make you knock that stuff off. Say that, let's say that you eat cookies at night.
Mm-hmm.
you're buying too many shoes. You're, you know, whatever it is, it's the thing you're like, oh, I wish I could just knock this off. I'm not, you know, I don't think we're talking about a heavy addiction cure. You know, this isn't the cure.
She's not going to knock you off heroin.
Right. This isn't the OxyContin cure that the country has been hoping for. But yeah, come on, knock that off. And you need help being pushed over that edge of like, yeah, I got to do something else.
So she could just tell you knock it off and you'll knock it off.
Mm-hmm. And it'll make sense. It won't be like you're feeling compelled. It's like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I do need to knock that off. And you're going to move along with it.
Is the tragic irony that she can't do it for herself?
I don't think I could do that to Natalia.
Okay.
Because it's one thing to not be able to knock off what you're doing, but to be able to have everybody else knock it off and then not be able, that's just too
sad. That would be the 60s Marvel thing. That would be her power, but she couldn't do it for herself. That's the tragedy.
I know how that story is going to end, and it's not good. No, I can't do that to Natalia. Natalia's a normal human.
Right.
She, you know, she has habits, and they're not all good.
She's not buying a ton of basketball shoes.
Vintage.
Vintage. Yeah, vintage. Sure.
Fake vintage. Yeah. I'm done.
Adam Nadler. You said that before. Adam Nadler.
No, like I'm literally, my shelf is out of space.
Yeah. There's always more room.
No, because here's the thing about compulsive collecting of things.
Yeah.
I don't like to have so many of something that I can't actually use it. So I usually stop at a certain point.
Uh-huh.
Like I don't have, that's why I don't have 40 guitars. I have 10.
Sure.
Natalia.
Adam Nadler. Natalia had her moment in the sun. Adam Nadler can reconstitute any bread. So, like, maybe you went and bought a baguette thinking you were going to make a baguette-friendly dinner, like pasta or something. And then you... Shit.
Wait. You can do something other than just eat the baguette immediately out of the package?
Right.
You know what? I need to knock that off.
You can occasionally, you know, reach into the bag while you're driving home and bite the end off.
You know how you said occasionally? And you know how what I thought was, that's what everyone does, isn't it?
You need Natalia, is what you're saying. Come over, and she's got a lot of work to do.
Nothing
at your place.
Nothing in the entire world is better than driving home, looking over at a piece of bread, ripping a hunk of that bread off while you drive and eating it. Okay. That's the best thing you're ever going
to
eat.
Anyway, if you don't happen to do that, and you leave, you know, like, oh shit, we actually can't use this tonight, and the next day it's a little stale, Adam can return it to its peak breadness. Or, you know, you go to make a sandwich, and your loaf of bread is moldy.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Return it to peak breadness.
Oh, man. Peak breadness is...
Yeah.
Can I tell you something about myself?
Yeah.
If I eat bread, like a big piece of bread or whatever, I get hiccups almost immediately every time.
Well, it's all the air in the bread.
I guess. Lindsay thinks I'm insane.
Well,
but it, like, she'll be in the other room, and she'll just hear... She'll be like, you ate the bread! No, I didn't.
We have 15 years of shows to possibly prove Lindsay to be correct.
Yeah, that's true.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks for being patrons at the $5 high level, Tom, Nick, Natalia, and Adam. You can do so as well and get your own superpower live on the show. Hey, look, we have time for email, and we don't even have to rush.
And we wasted a lot of time already.
Famous last words, by the way. Jason M. writes in, I've been thinking about this for the past 4 years since Brian Michael Bendis went to DC. Has it been 4 years?
Probably.
I've noticed a lot of similarities between Bendis and Jack Kirby's DC tenures. Both left Marvel, Bendis on better terms. I wouldn't necessarily think so. For DC, with much fanfare for their arrival, both focus on the Superman-related titles as well as cosmic stuff with a common narrative running through their various books. Both creators came loaded with tons of ideas, but didn't seem to fully connect with DC characters or readers. Kirby eventually, and begrudgingly, returned to Marvel later on, and with the announcement of Bendis taking his Jinx World books to Dark Horse, a return to Marvel somewhere down the line could one day happen for him too. Were both creators too ingrained in the Marvel Universe and style to get the same handle on the DC characters? Or did readers' tastes change at the same time both men unfortunately took a leap into a new career venture? I would go even further and say that DC knew that there was a similarity because the ads that DC used to publicize Bendis is moving to DC were the same exact ads they used for Kirby. They used the same format, layout, copy.
Yeah.
Instead of King is coming, they said Bendis is coming, but it was the same ads.
I mean, they wanted it to be that.
Yeah, they wanted it to be that, yeah.
That said, I actually don't see a whole lot of similarities other than that part, mm-hmm. I think. Mm. Bendis had a storied and extremely successful and lucrative career at Marvel. My understanding is that he had a pretty great contract at Marvel.
Yeah, he did.
Which Kirby did not. Kirby was a freelance employee.
Well, it's a different world. I mean, it's a very different world.
Totally. Right. But that's
Kirby would have had that contract if he had existed now instead of in the 60s.
Right. But would that exist now if it wasn't for Kirby? Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Kirby had just soured on Marvel entirely. You know, Bendis was part of the creative committee and did all the stuff. And Kirby just had, it had been like the last straw, you know, of whatever the stuff was. And, you know, he got wooed over there by DC. And it was supposed to be a big deal, but that didn't even go very well. You know, when Bendis got there, Bendis, I guarantee you, got to say, I'm going to do this and this. And they went, sure thing, Brian. When Kirby got there, they went, somebody redraw those faces. Right. Like, it wasn't the respect.
They weren't rewriting Bendis' scripts.
No. It's funny, because it's actually such a different world that I find it very difficult to make. I think you can make creative comparisons between...
Yeah, I think that's mostly where he's going here is...
Yeah, sorry.
I don't know that either is unsuccessful. You know, I think Kirby came in and he brought in the New Gods. Now, was his Superman work as successful? No. And like you said, they redrew some of it because it didn't fit the house style. But he did the Jimmy Olsen book, and then he created a whole universe of characters that literally they're still using this week. I don't think that's unsuccessful at all. And I think, you know, if you listen to the show, we quite enjoyed Bendis' DC work to various degrees. Not all of it's worked, but, we love the first year of Superman, both sides of it. And I'm still enjoying Checkmate.
I'm enjoying Justice League. I mean, there's a lot of good comics in there. It's just that they don't sell because his name is on them.
The world has changed. Yes. Bendis was the biggest name in comics for a decade, and then things changed.
So the other thing, though, is that like what Kirby wanted, and this is creative but also structural, is like he wanted to be in charge of his own comics. So he wrote, drew, edited. If there was anybody, he brought on his inker. They didn't like his inker, so they tried to replace his inker. You know, he wanted to like have his own little world and land of comics, and Bendis didn't do that. Bendis was like, I want to write these books. And Bendis, he has a lot of pull, so he's not going to take an artist that he doesn't want, and he's probably going to make that shot, that call on who it is. But it's just a different world. But he didn't want the same. I don't think Bendis was looking for the same thing that Jack was. Jack was looking for
respect.
Yeah, and relevance and his due and proper. And Bendis already had it. Bendis doesn't suffer from insecurity, I don't think, with his work in that way.
They're not one-to-ones. But the question is, was the arc similar? And possibly. I think, you know, we might be outliers. I think we are outliers in enjoying his DC work. So in that sense, it's not super successful. He's not moving the needle on the sales front.
Enjoy it or not, and people have said, and I've heard it, like, hey, you know, people really talk about the Marvel characters that he created in those stories, but... there's a lot of DC characters that are around because of him. You know, Etrigan, not Kazar, but the other one, Kamandi. Mm-hmm. You see Etrigan all the time. You know, you see, you know, the New Gods are an integral part of the DC universe now. Mm-hmm. Those had staying power that I think people tend to overshadow because of the staying power of like the Fantastic Four. And no one can say he didn't create those things whole cloth, and they're still around. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to take another route too. It was such a great world that it left so many entry points for telling different types of stories so that you have different versions of Mr. Miracle or, you know, like you can change around Orion's story. You put Orion on the Justice League for a while and you know, who Darkseid is and all the stuff that Tom King has done with that. Bendis created a couple of characters, but he didn't create a whole world.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Jack did, though.
I know. It's not a one-to-one comparison, but it's also not a far-off comparison, I don't think.
I think it's further off than I think you do.
He's talking about sort of the arc of their...
Mm-hmm. Are we talking about the career, or are we talking about creativity? Because the creativity stuff, like, they created different things. In different, you know, Bendis did what he does. He takes over a book or a family of books, and he makes it his, and he does that awesome. Whereas Jack was, he tried to do that to a certain extent, but really what he wanted to do and what he was ultimately more successful was just building a new thing.
Where I disagree with Jason is I don't think either of them didn't have a handle on DC characters. I just think they were both at different points in their careers.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't agree with that at all.
They were both past the point of sales or cultural relevance. And that, what I mean is, like, again, Bendis doesn't move the needle in terms of sales. Jack didn't reinvent the DC universe. You know, it was 10 years after Fantastic Four at this point. A lot of readers had moved on. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean what they did wasn't lasting and impactful, at least for Kirby's side.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
so I don't necessarily agree with the ultimate point Jason's making, but I think there are some similarities in their overall, you know, they both came in the later parts of their careers and after falling out with Marvel, and they both worked with Superman books. Like, that's all true.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting discussion to have. Not, you know what? I know a lot more about the details of Jack's situation than I do Bendis's. So that's another thing, too. I'm trying to think of, like, arcs of careers, because it seems to me like Jack's career spans such a long time. But then when you said it was only sort of 10 years in between the New Gods and Marvel, that kind of struck me. Because Bendis has been around for two decades in comics now.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like that long, but it's double the time of Jack and Stan and Steve creating the Marvel Universe to him taking off.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't that long. You know, like that's
but he had been in comics longer.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the difference. I think that you start the clock at a different place.
Yeah.
You know, he'd been in comics since the late 30s.
Right. So 40 years at that point.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy L., which is spelled like Jimi Hendrix, but not an L. Maybe Jimmy's middle name was Lawrence. James Lawrence Hendrix. It's James. Anyway, I have been listening to your show since the days of the video cast a long, long, long time ago. Anyway, this is a question I've always wanted for Connor. Why do you agree with the corporate side of things where Peter Parker should not be allowed to grow and be married and or divorced? You said Peter works best as this young screw up, but isn't Miles Morales more fitting for that kind of role? I am going to leave. You just text me when you're done.
I mean, I agree with it because it's right. It's a weird, that's a weird way to phrase the question, because it's like someone saying, why is Josh the best host for the show when you got Tom Cater's right here? Well, because Josh is the host and Peter Parker is Spider-Man and Peter Parker's.
Can I strike the remark?
Peter Parker should
be. That's not the reason.
My point is, you are the thing. The thing exists.
Right.
That's you. Peter Parker is the thing. It exists. It's Peter Parker. I mean, for me, and I realize Miles Morales exists in the Marvel Universe, but he's a non-factor. I don't read any of the books he's involved in. I don't think there was any real benefit to bring him over into the regular Marvel Universe.
So we could get that awesome movie.
The movie was awesome, but you could have done the movie without him being in the Marvel Universe.
Sure.
We talked about it at the time, like, what could be the benefit of this, and I don't think there's really any real benefit to it in terms of the overall tapestry of the universe. But anyway, the point of the question. Why do I agree with the corporate side that Peter Parker shouldn't grow and change and get married and divorced? Because these are eternal characters. They have to exist beyond you and me and Josh and Jimmy. They have to exist for 50 more years, or they should. And so therefore you can't do that to them. You can't make fundamental changes to them without totally blowing that proposition. We all have very strong emotional attachments to these characters because we often read them for decades and decades and decades, but we sometimes forget that they aren't our characters. Mm-hmm. Peter Parker was created in the 60s. And they got to exist for another 60 years. Why would you want to take away Peter Parker, Spider-Man from a kid in 2062 or 2092?
Mm-hmm.
Comic fans get so emotionally attached to the characters, they want them to evolve with them as readers. You know, we start off as kids reading them. We're younger than the characters. We look up to the characters. And then at a certain point, we're the same age as the characters. Then at a certain point, we get older. And we want their lives to reflect our own. But they can't without destroying them. Why would you want to destroy them? Quesada's whole thing was, the only thing more unrelatable to a kid than a married superhero is a divorced superhero. And that I agree with that. Peter Parker can't be a young hero who's divorced.
That he's like a totem. I think that point makes sense, and I have heard it, but I think that you put it in a really understandable way, is that the character is a representative of a thing. And so the basis of that character is this thing. And if you change that, then you change the character, and then that character's gone.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would say is that we do live in a world where you can have more than one of those characters. And if
yes,
the version that the most people see is one thing, because the version that the least, I'd say that the least important version to the public at large is what's happening in the mainstream regular comic book.
Yes, however, the thing happening in the mainstream comic book is the thing that influences the other things. I know this from on both sides of the aisle, is that publishing still makes the big decisions. And the things that are done in the other mediums are still based off of what publishing is doing. So the main Peter Parker, the main Clark Kent, the main Bruce Wayne, the main Steve Rogers, that has to be the one in the comic book, and it has to be eternal. That's why I don't like Damian. That's why I don't like Jonathan Kent. It's changing the character in ways we don't necessarily see until it's too late.
Right. I don't disagree with that. I think there are benefits to some of those others. I think, you know, I think you're right about John Kent. At the same time, I've enjoyed the Superman as a
There's short-term benefits to the stories people are reading right now, but you have to think larger than that, because these are characters. The Greek myths you know, the characters are eternal and unchanging because they have to be universal forever. Listen, these are mythological characters. Peter Parker has to be Peter Parker forever. Not because we want to change him now, because we're the ones reading him right now. It's a selfish thought. We've all had it. I'm not attacking Jimmy. Everyone's had it. You even go back into the 60s and read the letter column. The same questions were being asked just years after they were created. Because people who are reading it now want it to be about now, but it's more than now. We are going to die. Peter Parker's going to live on, and he has to live on.
You have that cosmic reset button, though. That's
Marvel doesn't tend to press it as much. They did with Peter Parker because it had gone too far. And DC seems loath to now. You know, they didn't really change that much with New 52 even. The characters stay the same. So we are stewards of these characters, but we can't change them to fit our liking. They have to live forever.
I feel like there's, from the corporate point of view, is not the same as yours, really. It's just about on that one character that was a thing. And I don't even think of that as a corporate point of view. I think if that is, it just happened that Joe Quesada was in charge of that corporation in the same way that when Danny DeDio was in charge of the Nightwing situation. Right. That wasn't really like that was like it was being driven by the opinion of one guy, you know, valid or no. I think that basically the corporations want to have their cake and eat it too, which is sort of possible. And I don't know that I blame them for it, but I think that's how you get that morass of you know, continuity or whatever.
Yeah.
But I have also started to think that that's a feature, not a bug. I appreciate it more now. I appreciate that it's annoying, if that makes sense. Like, I don't get mad about it. I think it's kind of funny. Like, oh, this is a complete mess. Unless the stories that you read aren't clear or aren't good because of it. Other than that, it's great.
And what you said earlier is not wrong. Like, we're in a world where you can now have various Spider-Men. You can have a Peter Parker graphic novel about him in high school. You can have, but at the end of the day, the through line is still the through line and it has to exist. I know it's frustrating. The number one complaint about comic readers, and it used to be something that Josh said all the time, was that nothing changes, nothing happens. And that's the point.
Yes. What about this, though?
It's a never-ending battle for truth, justice.
One of the strengths of Batman that we've talked about is his ability to be many things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have many different types of Batman. So what is the through line that makes that eternal, which is different than,
right. It's Batman and Alfred and Gotham City. You can't change the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Marrying Catwoman is the change of the fundamentals. That's just why I knew that was never going to happen. They can do future stories. No, because then there's divorced Batman. Then it's a whole different thing. You can do future stories where it's,
well,
where
I mean,
it's
happened. This is the complaint that we have about every time you kill, you know, they kill Jason Todd. When they do stuff, that would break the character. So then you have to live with this cognitive dissonance of, so now we've got this superhero character who's broken until we learn to start ignoring that and going back, and then eventually bring that character back. Very interesting. I can't think of another medium.
There isn't one, because nothing goes on forever, like comics.
Right, but these do. It's really interesting.
They go on forever and every week. Like, TV shows are the only other medium that's similar, but TV shows don't go on every week forever. They go on for 10 weeks or 20 weeks. Soap operas, that's the only other thing.
But those actors age.
The actors age out of their roles and die because they're real people.
James Bond is the closest.
Yes and no, because they come out every couple of years, and it's you know. It's soap operas is the only other storytelling device that's similar to comics in that these stories have been happening for 30 years. But like you said, they're dependent on real people.
And those people do age, so you can't ignore
them. Batman doesn't have to age ever. He can remain 33 forever.
That's a good question. That was a better question than it seemed at first.
Yeah, no, for sure. Good question, Jimmy. Jason as well. contact@fanboy.com is where you can write in to get a question on this show. Also for the Media Splode monthly show, if you do have a Media Splode question, please put Media Splode in the subject line so we know what it's for. And also, this is episode 797, which means in 3 weeks, episode 800 is coming. And if you know what that means, you know it's the all-email spectacular that we do on the big shows. We'll talk about the Pick of the Week book, and then we'll spend the rest of the time talking about answering your emails. So if you want your email considered for that show, and not every email will make it just because we get too many, put 800 in the subject line so we know. We've already started filing them away. We've already got lots of good questions for it, but we always want more. So episode 800 is coming. Put 800 in the subject line. Any subject you want to talk about. You want to ask us questions about college? About Josh's car, about comics, anything you want. We'll talk about it. We won't necessarily answer your question, but we will talk about it.
We'll say something.
Yeah. What's happening now? Well, previous to the show, you had the special edition Batman The Long Halloween Part 2, which was the animated brain trust talking about the second part of the Batman The Long Halloween adaptation. That's behind the show in the feed. Coming up this very week, you'll have the next Media Splode. What's it going to be about? We don't know. And then later this month, you'll have a Talk Splode. Josh, you have it scheduled?
Yeah. Not quite.
The heavens opened up, the light shined down on you, and you got an episode Yep. Maybe scheduled.
Yeah. By the end of this month.
The next two are scheduled.
More or less. They're agreed to. I just got to do them.
So there you go. And then if you're a patron, the next patron hangout, September 18th, 9 p.m. Eastern. Before that will be the happy hour. So if you're a patron, you want to hang out with us and talk nonsense. So that's where a lot of comic issues are discussed. Like, we spent a lot of time talking about the Substack news in the last hangout. So if you want to join up, you can join up before September 18th and come hang out with us. And then, like I said, the Pick of the 800 show is coming. We're going to live stream that shit. It's going to be October 1st at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And we may or may not have Ryan Haupt with us. He just had a baby, if you haven't seen. So he is in discussions. So we'll find out. It may just be me and Josh. It may be me, Josh, and Ryan. We don't know. And then finally, Shang-Chi is out in theaters, made a lot of money, but we won't be reviewing it until it hits streaming because neither Josh nor I want to go to the movie theater right now. Even though
I was looking. I might go on like a Tuesday night.
Josh might go on a Tuesday night because where he lives, there won't be anybody there. But neither one of us, although we love going to the movies, want to go to the movies right now.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
We did it.
We did it.
Again.
You have the end.
I know. Sorry. You know what was happening there?
What?
I was looking at products on ifanboyonthreadless.com. Like, seriously.
Well, the sale's going on. We didn't mention that. Sorry. When you hear the show, there'll be a couple more days of the sale happening at the iFanboy store. The shirts are $15, I believe.
Yeah, you can see all the products are marked down to a certain extent. I think it's 10% off.
What's the date it ends?
I don't know.
You're looking at it.
I'm looking at this, but it doesn't say. It says what the price is and what the discount is, but it doesn't say when it ends. So listen, get over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows, our vast history of comic book writing from all our talented writers. You can go to facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter or at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can also go to C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. And that's ironic, given what I said about social media earlier, but those are pretty harmless areas to be. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy and keep up to date with the old video show re-uploads. This past week, there's a mini with my pal Alex Robinson's first comic.
It's the first one he made.
First one he made. That's what I figured it was.
Which was like when he was a kid, he still has it. So he walked us through.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I don't remember that. I kind of remember.
I didn't remember it either. I was like, what is this? And I was like, oh, shit.
That's awesome. Yeah. I might send that to him. There's a Vault show where we talk about Battlefields, the Garth Ennis. War book. Spawn Origins and Unknown Soldier. I'm just trying to look for a theme there. There isn't one.
There isn't one.
Unknown Soldier was a Vertigo mini, I think.
Yes.
Based on an older war comic.
It was a Josh Dysart book, I think.
Ooh, I think that's correct.
Wow. Where did I pull that out of?
I don't know. There's a lot of things I can't remember, but there's a lot of things I can that I don't need to.
I don't need that one in there.
We did a show on Terry Moore. This was the part that included the party for the end of Strangers in Paradise, and then we talked about the work.
Maybe I don't remember.
Terry Moore of Strangers in Paradise. This is actually before he'd done a lot of the books that he's done. He's created Universe.
He just started Echo.
Yep.
There's a couch show we lit through his career, and then I think there was an interview in there. I think you're right.
Yeah, he was doing like Birds of Prey for a little while. I think.
Yeah, he did a couple of DC books. They had him do a couple, and he did Runaways, and then none of those really worked. Back to his thing. So here's the deal on the sale. So if you are listening to this show when it comes out on Sunday, September 12th, that is the last day of the t-shirt sale. So you get one day. If you listen to this on Monday, it's too late. Sunday, September 12th, sale ends at 5 p.m. Central Time. Regular tees are $15. Everything else is reduced prices. So if you want to check out one of our shirts or you want to get that Hawkeye skateboard, Josh, which you were probably looking at.
I've got time. Well, you know what also looks good? Stay Home and Read Comics skateboard looks awesome.
So,
and then the I Love Comics, I was looking to see, it goes sideways. So instead of being vertical and small, it goes lengthwise across the skateboard, which is nice. And I thought, you know what would look good on that? Is nothing makes sense, nothing matters on the skateboard, but that is not enabled for skateboard. So we're going to talk to the person who administrates that and make that possible.
So there you go. If you like the show, please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's a star rating or a written review. We appreciate that. It helps the algorithm, which is everyone knows it's all about the algorithm. And even better than that is tell your friends. Word of mouth is a great way to help support the show. Let them know that you enjoy our suite of podcasts, as I told someone recently.
Oh.
And thanks for listening this week. This was a fun one.
Here's another thing you learned about me this week.
What?
You said, what are you doing? And I don't lie. I'm bad at it. So just go, I was looking at this thing. because that's my MO. But I don't think it's a bad thing that I was looking through the products that we sell.
No.
I was fascinated. I was like, this is great what we're doing here.
You also let people know that we actually don't get them for free. We have to buy them ourselves as well.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
That's, we're all the same in that sense.
Tell you what, though. What? The Tri-Blend shirt?
The best.
That's the way to go. They hold up great.
I got. Did I tell you I got complimented on my Tri-Blend Stay Home Read Comics shirt the other day? I was out getting a COVID test.
Nice.
Because I had a tertiary exposure. Mm-hmm. I was walking to the clinic in my Tri-Blend Stay Home Read Comics baseball tee, and this guy stopped me and said, that's a great shirt. I said, thank you.
Nice.
And then I gave him a card, and then we're friends now.
Well, all right, then. That happened. And you got the, is it the red Tri-Blend?
It's the red arms and gray body.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's my favorite shirt. It's really comfortable. Anyway, that's this week's show. I had fun. Did you have fun?
I had a great time.
I hope you had fun out there in listener land. And we'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Connor.
I had an awesome time. We know, Frank. The whole town knows you had an awesome time.
I just watched that this week. Rewatched it.
Always good. Thank you, my love.